Hello and welcome to A Bit Spursy. I'm Barney.
I'm Dan.
And we are here for the first time with a guest. I can't think of a describing word. I want to say a nice word, but then also I want to say a nasty term.
Follow your heart.
Follow my heart. The horrendous Tim Wingfield, Chelsea fan and a very good friend of mine who has agreed to come on the pod. Originally the plan to have Tim on that we had sort of come up with was that we wanted to have him on after Chelsea played their game against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League, because we were like, well, they'll lose and get kicked out, and then we get to talk to him post that after we've just gone through to the next round of the Europa League.
This has horrendously backfired, more than a plan could have ever backfired.
Yeah, yeah.
We thought, we're going to be going through, Chelsea going to be going out.
Yeah.
We basically get to get Tim on and just roast Chelsea.
Yeah.
And it's turned out to be the worst week in recent memory.
In recent memory, yep. I remember last Europa pod that we did, you said, you know, I think things are looking up. You know, next week we've got the North London Derby. If we win that and then we through to the next round of the Europa League, but if we don't, that is horrendous and one of the worst weeks I can, you know, imagine happening.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened.
I think I very confidently announced it's either going to be a very good week for us,
yeah,
or an absolutely horrendous week.
Yeah.
And sadly, the latter has happened.
Yeah. Absolutely shocking.
So welcome, Tim. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Good times, good friends.
Yeah. How do you feel post the Chelsea advancement in the Champions League?
Look, I'm pretty happy. I was a little bit worried when we initially drew Atletico Madrid. I thought, well, you know, we still had Frank, beloved Frank, my one and only Frank. But I was pretty worried about the fixture, and I thought that we probably wouldn't go through. Tommy T comes in, we get that crucial away goal, come home and 2-0 at home. So I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, you're looking very happy.
Yeah, you're looking very relaxed, very happy. I'm scratching myself at the moment. Dan, he has not slept in days. Yeah,
no, I'm. I don't even know what I am anymore.
No. And I can't tell you.
Yeah. It's bad. Look, can we just get this over and done with, yeah, with the Dynamo game? Because, yeah, like, what happened here? What happened?
I don't know. Well, I mean, usually we like to go through the moments of the game and go through how the goals happened, but I don't really know if I want to do that today, because the whole game was so shockingly bad that it's difficult to sort of pinpoint particular moments that have any kind of significance when the overall picture is so terrible.
Oh, it was horrendous. It was shocking. Yeah. You know, team selection to begin with, was not really that surprising.
Nope.
So I don't actually think there was much of a problem with the team selection.
Oh, you don't?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Like, you do?
I do. Yeah, I really do. I think that Mourinho came out and said before the game, we need to attack and kill the game off, and we're going to do that. And then he set up with a team with a midfield of Harry Winks and Moussa Sissoko, which for 2 years has been a problem, and also not a midfield that can hold the ball particularly well. And in front of them, he played Lucas, Dele and Lamella, all of which aren't particularly good possession players, right? You know, this team looks like a team that's going to counterattack and try and skip that midfield, because Dele's not holding the ball up either. And so to me, the message and what was put out were quite disparate. Also, I think starting Harry Kane, so risky. Like, play Vinicius. Like, start Vinicius.
Definitely. I'm a big Vinicius fan, and I would have loved to see him start. I guess why I don't want to say I'm defending the starting lineup.
Yep.
But my thought overall is that starting lineup should be able to get the job done in a game like that.
Yes.
So I think that's why if we've got those players in the squad, they should be able to beat Dynamo. No respect to Dynamo. So no respect. No respect. No respect. Stop it. They're through. Who cares? Yeah. No disrespect to Dynamo, but, you know, in the first game, they completely looked out of the game. Like, it didn't look like Dynamo were going to really trouble us at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I felt like, even if, you know, this isn't our ideal lineup, like, if these players are in our squad, they should be able to go and do the job once we're up 2-0.
Yep.
And the game was just, I thought it was just pathetic in the effort as and I know that's a very sort of like easy and simplistic thing to say.
Yeah.
But it was similar to the Arsenal game in the sense that at least for Arsenal, we had Lamella who was trying and throwing elbows.
Yeah.
And got sent off, but, you know, showed a bit of heart, threw himself about a bit. And I just felt in this game, we just didn't really have anyone doing any of that.
Yeah. I was surprised that from the outside in, I was a little bit surprised at the lineup just because I thought that having been up two goals, I thought Dinamo would probably come out and just go at it, not worry too much about conceding an attack. And I thought that Jose would maybe play your strongest possible team because although you can still climb in the table in the league, winning the Europa League would be a pretty amazing achievement. And so I thought that maybe he would start with that team and just kill them early and then make substitutions. And I wonder if maybe he underestimated how they would play or if he thought that they, you know, they wouldn't come out as well as they did. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there's a few points there because I agree with that as an overall sentiment. I think that maybe it could have been a case of seeing how some of our players, like your Højbjergs, like your Ndombeles, how they've been playing recently and they've looked absolutely shot and they've looked like they needed some sort of rest. Possibly he was thinking, okay, maybe we can rest them here. And if they're on, like, I don't think either of those two played particularly well against Arsenal.
No.
At all. And I do put that down to sort of energy levels as the main thing. So I kind of thought that, yeah, I also thought in this game, in the first half, Dinamo didn't look particularly threatening overall. Mm. And it was really like we were getting to sort of half time and I still wasn't too worried. But then they just came out all guns blazing in the second half.
Mm.
And old mate Orsic, which we've spoken about before with his stupid 99 on his back.
99.
He just tore Aurier to shreds.
Yeah, he did.
He absolutely abused Aurier in that game.
Mm.
Aurier was shocking. He was
yeah.
He was horrible.
Was there anyone though that like wasn't abjectly terrible? Like I'm including Harry Kane in that. I thought he was awful.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. Like overall, awful all over the park. I'm guessing I could be picking on Aurier a bit because the goals came against the player he should be marking.
Mm.
And especially that first one, he got caught completely out of position.
Yeah.
Was diving in for some tackle way up the field. And then they just bombed forward. To be fair, it was a bit of a wonder strike.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So maybe you can let that one slide. Yeah. Yeah, you enjoyed that one, Tim, did you?
Yeah.
No, I didn't enjoy it. Okay?
It was a wonder strike.
It was a wonder strike. Yeah,
one of the best goals I've ever seen.
But I think like a goal like that, how often do you score that? So, you know, that was probably a mistake on Aurier's side, but at the same time, that's a top bins goal, isn't it? He takes it from that far corner outside, whips it in. I think there's a bit of luck in that one too.
No, to be fair, it is top bins.
Yeah. Yeah. To be fair, it's top bins.
It's top bins.
99.
I think though then you have the second goal, that was one, I think that was the one on like the edge of the 6-yard box from the cross.
Yep.
Mm. just defending was just non-existent.
Yeah.
Just a complete shambles.
Complete shambles. Like, I mean, all three goals, like no defending whatsoever. For me, the most damning was the last goal where Orsic is able to just run from sort of the halfway line. Aurier does the weirdest attempt at a tackle, then moves to the outside because he thinks Sissoko is going to cover him on the inside. But Sissoko then just follows him outside, which then leaves heaps of space for Orsic to run in and no one else reacts and he scores. Yeah.
Oh, it felt like the parting of the Red Sea. It was just open right up.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, Orsic, once you've already banged in two, that always seems to happen, you know.
Mm.
Players get up and about, they score a couple of goals, and then you just know that they're going to score when they shoot next.
Yeah.
And look, I don't think Hugo could have done much more to sort of stop that. It was pretty bottom corner.
Yeah.
Pretty bottom bins. Do people ever say bottom bins?
I don't know. I haven't heard it.
I can't say I've heard it either, to be honest.
I mean, we don't have to run with it.
No, I was just thinking, yeah, let's run with it. Yeah, nice bottom bins.
Nice bottom bins.
Yeah, bottom bins. What did you think of the like the subs, it's a classic thing that we've seen from Jose, and you might have something to say on this, Tim, about whether he used to do this at Chelsea, where it's like, okay, we need a goal. So what I'm going to do is just throw on all our good attacking players, and then we'll just hopefully something will happen. And it didn't. And, you know, it comes back to, which is a complaint that's been made about the team and Jose's management of Tottenham, is that there is no attacking plan whatsoever. He's relying on improvisation and moments of brilliance. And no matter how many attacking players you put on the field, I think without any kind of plan, you can't reliably assume that you're going to score. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that's a good point. I think that, you know, especially when we've had, say, Harry and Son mostly at the start of the season, and then Bale sliding in a little bit and starting to contribute a bit more, there probably have been a lot of times where we've just gotten out of jail by relying on, you know, some moments of brilliance or, you know, those players to sort of pick us up and get by.
Mm.
But, yeah, it did seem for most of the game there wasn't much of a plan. And then when the subs came on, I don't know, none of them really had much of an impact.
No.
So you really do wonder, like, what was the halftime team talk there? What was the plan? Like, I think it's, you know, as fans, we watch these games and we're often wondering, like, what's going on. But you never really get an explanation of what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think that would help sometimes to understand of, you know, Mourinho says the players aren't following the plan. Then players come out and say, like, oh, Mourinho doesn't tell us to sit back. But there's nothing more than that from a tactical level.
Yeah.
So it would be nice to just know, like, all right, just what were we trying to do?
Mm. Well, according to Hugo,
yeah,
he was not happy, was he?
Oh, that interview was amazing.
It was a really good insight into, I suppose, how maybe some of the players are feeling at the moment, and just how angry he was. And to talk about the training and how things are at training, and maybe, you know, you're talking about what's the attacking plan. Well, from what you get from Lloris is that maybe there isn't one.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty damning damning chat from Hugo, and it's worrying. I think for me, though, is that, you know, obviously having had Jose at Chelsea, and what surprises me with you at the moment is, like, in that game, obviously there's individual players who didn't play very well, but from a defensive unit, like as a whole team, they were all over the place. I think it was maybe the second goal, Aurier might have been out of position, but then I think it was maybe Sanchez. His positioning was really off, and then his back was to the player that was attacking, and he just had all this space to come in and score, and it just felt like, you know, there's no cohesion in defense, or maybe there's no stereotypical thing of there has to be this big leader in there. But I don't know if there is someone other than Hugo really telling them where to be and what to do, and they look confused to me at times, and that was maybe how they were broken up.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we mentioned it before on here as well that, like, Dier and Sanchez's defensive pairing does not look good. It hasn't looked good any times they've played together. We need old man Toby in there to provide some sort of solidity. And I don't know if he's necessarily that, you know, defensive leader that you're talking about, you know, like a Van Dijk type. Like, but I think he is definitely more of a leader than Dier or Sanchez.
I think he is, though, right? He's a fantastic player. He'd have to be one of the best, you know, centre backs in the league still, I think, with both his experience. Probably when you watch him on the field and he barks orders and he is that dominant player, he might have maybe lost a bit of a step in his pace or whatnot, but he's still a player that if he's not in that team, can you rely on, like you said, Dier or Sanchez? And can you clarify for me, is Dier... is he a centre back? Like, did he used to be a central defensive midfielder?
I think you'd say, can you clarify, is Dier a footballer?
Yeah.
Is he, he did, so he's been kind of this like utility player.
Yeah.
He was playing in, I think the first game he played for us.
He played right back.
He played right back, didn't
yep.
he?
Yeah, right.
And then I'm not too sure where he was playing at Sporting. I think he was maybe.
He played in the midfield.
He was midfield there as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think he played in the, like, you know, DM for us for a while. sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't.
Yep.
And then kind of got pushed back into centre back, and I was like, oh, maybe we found his position. I think he's been one of these players, though, that he's been so, I guess, I don't know, thought of as a bit of a utility player, both for Spurs and for England for a while, that maybe he hasn't had enough sort of consistent time in one position to develop. Like, my understanding is a lot of players, like, you know, even when they're young, it's like, okay, you know, you're a centre back, you're a right back, you know, you're a wing, you're a forward. Obviously, some players do over time morph into something else, like Bale, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost seems like Dyer has, I don't know, he's just never done something at a really elite level. So he hasn't really, it's almost like he hasn't found a home.
I wonder whether it's related to when he was playing CDM for us and then he became unwell and he had appendicitis and his appendix got taken out. And then he got an infection from the surgery and then was unwell after that. And then once he came back from that, he couldn't play in the midfield anymore and then decided that he wanted to play centre back. And maybe that injury, well, that illness is like still lingering. On top of the fact that he doesn't have a sort of a specialty in any particular role.
Mm.
He's limited by that, and that his form, how he plays at the moment, is a result of both those factors.
Yeah, I think so, and I think even you know, to what you're saying too, like it's really hard to put it down to what the sort of you know what the solution is to deal with that. Maybe also he's just not good enough.
Yeah. He seems to have I think I've said this before, but no awareness unless he is facing the ball. He has no idea where the ball is and where any other player is. Like his spatial awareness, it seems to be just terrible, which as a centre-back, pretty important.
Some of those decisions he makes as well, like some of those balls he goes for or slide tackles in the box, you wonder, what is he thinking?
Yeah, and that's it. Like, you do often wonder, what is he thinking? Like, I don't think he really looks composed back there.
No.
Ever.
Mm.
And yeah, it's just let us down again. Not to blame the result fully on him, but I think yeah, for a while we have been a team that we don't really have any solidity at the back, which is why like you know a team like Dinamo get a bit excited, mount a few cohesive attacks together, and they can just tear us to shreds.
Yeah, yeah.
Bringing it back to a slight positive, I suppose, in that some of your attacks, they looked threatening a couple of times. But Harry Kane got so unlucky with that. There was like I think someone took a shot, was it Stevie? And then it rebounded to Kane and he basically hit it on the volley. And just as it was about to cross the line, it was either the keeper or one of the players blocked it. And it was like the 84th minute, I think. It's just after Dinamo had scored maybe their third.
I think that's the keeper that saved that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, it was amazing. Like when you see it on slow-mo as well, you look and you go, Kane just kind of put it centrally to the goal, but such a reaction. It's such a reactionary shot that he takes. So just getting it on target is all you generally 100%. Need to do there. And you see the keeper just scramble across, flying through the air. He just makes a really amazing save. And I think he also made I think Harry had one or two headers earlier in the game as well. One that got sort of, I think, cleared by another defender near the line. Yeah. And like it seemed like there were a few chances that Harry had, and I wonder if we had a fit Harry, like a real fit Harry, I think he would have put one of those away.
Yeah.
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 It just seemed a bit tame from him in that sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think out of desperation when the team actually got cooking with 10 minutes to go and we started attacking properly, he was exhausted, right? You know, he was able to in that moment overcome his fitness, I guess. But yeah, I agree with you. I think if he had that mentality from the start, which is obviously impossible because that only occurs when you've got 10 minutes to go and you're about to get knocked out of competition. But yeah, it was scary to see him look so exhausted for the entire game.
Yeah.
But perhaps he was just missing his number one boy, son. He was upset. He needed him there. He's looking for him. He can't find him. He's doing it himself.
So is your theory that Harry Kane played terribly because the whole game he was like, where's Son? I can't see him.
He's upset, man.
Yeah, he's distracted. He's upset.
They're a package deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, where's his safety blanket?
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
It could be that. It could also be, yeah, the fact that Son isn't there and he's like, well, who do I have to pass it to here? Lucas?
Yeah. No, thank you.
Lamella? Like, yeah, the options are not quite Son and Bale.
Yeah. Mm. No, they're not. We've mentioned it already, but I have watched that Hugo Lloris interview so many times, and I think the opening of it, I've got it written here. I think we are all more than disappointed. It's a disgrace. I just hope everyone in the changing room feels responsible of the situation, because it's a disgrace. Was so damning. And I've read a few different interpretations about this, but he really seems to focus on the players and players. He goes on to say that he doesn't feel like there's a togetherness in the team, and that people on the bench need to be pushing the team, and they shouldn't be complaining. And you could, if you only care about the team when you're in it, then that's a, you know, bad situation. And I think, yeah, he says, it's not because there are two, three, or four players that are going to step up. We need more than that. The other thing he says, which I thought was like pretty scary, was there are problems. He says something about there's problems in the club, in the club and in the team, and the game style is a reflection of that.
He basically mentioned problems everywhere.
Yeah.
It was nice. I guess it was refreshing to see at least one, you know, player after a game like that and really quite an embarrassing week come out and be so, so kind of like honest about how they sort of feel things are going. Because usually we just get the like, oh, you know, it was a poor result. They played better on the day and we'll have to pick ourselves up for next game.
Yeah.
And we're like, as fans at this stage, we're like, we don't care about that. We want more. Give us more. Like, give us a better explanation than just like we didn't play well. So even though the explanation that was given points to a lot of deeper issues, which long term are not good at all, I guess it's nice to hear some of those things actually being addressed publicly and not just coming from Mourinho calling out a player who's not playing well.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I wonder, and it's impossible to guess who he is talking about, but in terms of the players that aren't, you know, pulling their weight or not focused enough. But the club, when he says about we're not doing the basics, and he refers to the club and the team at the same time, it's like they're not doing the basics in training. They're not preparing enough, or the club is not doing the basics in recruiting, or... Yeah, like you said, it was great to hear him just express it, but also it was like, oh, no.
The basics could mean anything. Mm. They could mean so many different things here, which is a really scary can of worms. It's like I don't want to open like as a club, but ultimately I think we really have to now.
Yeah.
Like I would be very surprised if this is the last we hear of anything.
Mm.
There has been from up until now like radio silence from basically everyone else.
Yeah.
Apart from Joe Hart celebrating a 3-0 victory.
Yeah.
That was on his Instagram story.
Yeah. He was there. Like,
yeah. And look, and he said, I understand it to an extent where he was like, oh, look, a member of my social media team got the result wrong and they put up a post. But even if that, like, it didn't even make sense though, because if we would have won 3-0, they had the aggregate score on the post too, which said 3-2. So if we would have won 3-0, it would have been 5-0 aggregate score. So, like, it's just real sloppy from – I don't know if Joe Hart's got some, like, you know, young interns just jumping on his social – and giving him such an important task to do is like, all right, when we go through the result of this game, Joey, I know you're 16. You got school in the morning.
Wait. Do you think that Joe Hart has an intern called Joey who is 16 still at school? That makes complete sense for Joe Hart.
I think
this is Joey. He's my intern.
It's basic. It's easy. It's like, what's your intern's name, Joey? Like, well, I don't, if it's Joey.
Yeah.
He's not going to forget that.
I feel like he would only employ people that have J names or something. Like, yeah. Like, yeah.
I think that's good. Yeah. I could see him doing that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel that is the only explanation here of what you can do. Maybe they're failing maths, right? Maybe they're like, because there's so many issues with like the posting of that, like saying job done. Like, did that person, like, they obviously didn't watch the game.
Yeah.
Because to put up afterwards, job done, big tick, wrong score, wrong aggregate, wrong everything, they have a photo from the match.
Yeah.
So I don't really understand how this post has sort of happened. It's one of those things, like, I don't blame Joe necessarily himself, but it's like, if a company does something really bad, you're going to, ultimately the CEO is to blame here.
Yeah.
So it's like, Joe's stuffed up somewhere along the line here. And I've never seen a post like this before where a player has like put up such a celebratory post about one of the worst defeats that a club has been through.
But Joey's probably sitting in his room. He's realized he's got to make this post. His mum's shouting at him, dinner time. He's going, oh, I got to do it quickly.
Yeah.
He's seen a score. He's posted it and he's run downstairs.
Yeah.
He's 16.
We can't blame Joey in this.
No. Joey's not at fault here. No.
And it would be wrong for anyone to start casting. Like, I'm glad you pulled that up, Tim, because I felt for a second, maybe I was throwing a bit too much shade at Joey and it was not his fault.
No, it wasn't his fault. You know, he's just trying to, start in a field that he wants to work in early while he's trying to manage his schoolwork. He's just trying to get his foot in the door with a bit of interning, and Joe Hart provided that opportunity. A poisoned chalice. A poisoned chalice.
And now poor Joey, when he goes and applies to work at any of these other social media agencies, now he's going to have this blemish on his record.
Poor old Joey.
Poor old Joey. Poor old Joey.
So it's a career ruined. That's the real travesty from this whole game.
Yeah. I think I was thinking about this on the way here. This is the worst Spurs loss I've ever seen.
In what sense?
In the sense that it was the worst performance against a side that you would think would not be able to compete considering the league that they're from. I've seen us lose, like 6-0 to City or 5-0 to Liverpool. But this, for me, was the worst loss out of all of them because of how it occurred, and we were so passive as it was happening. Even at 2-2, it was so passive.
Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah.
Because I'd say other like recent losses or even losses over the last, 10 years or so that sort of stick out would be obviously Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
But Liverpool, a good team, obviously.
Yep.
And there was the disgusting handball call.
Oh, yeah.
Never handball. So we can feel that's what we've got to like hang our hat on and go, that was, we got, they did wrong by us. So so that's why that game went that way. Battle of the Bridge. I remember watching that. That was also a painful one.
Oh, yeah.
Even though we didn't lose, but we lost the chance of, because that gave Leicester the title.
Yeah.
So I think that was pretty painful to be. I think we were up 2-0 in that game as well.
Yeah, we sure were. Yeah. Oh, you remember that? You remember that one?
I think so. A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good game, wasn't it, Tim?
It was a pretty wild game. It was good. It was fun. I think maybe that's the only game I've seen a team completely just go wild. How many red cards were in that team? Not that team, the game.
Red cards were actually given or none?
Was there not?
No.
Yeah.
No,
there were some horrendous challenges.
Yeah.
Wow. In my mind, I was like, there are at least 5 red cards in that game.
Nope. There wasn't one red card because Michael Oliver was the ref and he just lost control of the game, basically.
Yeah.
And I think as it capitulated, there was a particularly bad challenge, I think, on Hazard.
Yeah.
Might have been, I want to say Lamella because it sounds like what Lamella would do, but it also could very well have been Dyer. Yeah, there were some bad tackles in that game. But I vividly remember watching that game and thinking 2-0, all right, here we go. It still wasn't a given. We still needed to win the next week, and I think Leicester needed to drop points.
Yeah.
But it was this thing of like, all right, here we go. We're up 2-0 at the Bridge.
Yeah.
Finally, we're going to taste some sweet success in this league. And then just capitulating. So I think maybe this had a similar sort of feeling to me in that sense of, you know, we were up and then just sort of threw it away. Mm. Although this, yeah, now that after we've spoken about it, I'm with you on this, that this one, because there was no like fight shown in this one.
Yeah.
At least in the Battle of the Bridge, we're hacking Hazard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you have a player like Hazard who, you know, is like one of the best players in the world, and he took the game average.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he's not very good. But he, you know, he took hold of that game towards the end. And so I think it's still, well, at least, you know, I'm not a Tottenham fan, so I can't say I know exactly how you feel, but like it's so different when you have a player like that to change a game. Whereas when, you know, Dynamo they're an okay team, but you don't expect to lose a game in that way with one player scoring 3 goals.
Oh, definitely. No. And you're right. I think the other thing that just kind of occurred to me too is when we were watching this game, there was no crowd noise.
No.
On this. And I don't know if that changed the experience, because I know the players don't get crowd noise at any of the games.
Mm.
So yeah. It doesn't change it. It shouldn't change it for them. But when we're watching this game, like all the Premier League games we get to see all the crowd, hear all the crowd noise. And I think that kind of helps like control your emotions a little bit. Whereas this one being sort of dead silent and just hearing players like, and that's kind of what you hear all game. Like, I don't know. It took a bit of like,
that was a really good impression. impression of what it sounds like. Sorry, yeah, it took the zest out of it. Yeah. You're right, it did take the zest out of it. It made the whole thing feel more hollow than it already felt with how the team rocked up and how they were playing.
Yeah, like yeah. I guess I mean like if we had that crowd noise and it was building up, and even if Dynamo were scoring their goals, like at least in your brain you're like, oh, the crowd's getting behind them, damn.
Yeah.
Oh, the crowd's getting behind the home team. Oh, of course they are. And then it would feel more like that. But just to see it just dead silence and then just cutting us to pieces and just walking through us, it was just like I also felt that Dynamo in some ways, I took note of their stadium music. And, you know, like most Premier League games, for example, you know, you might have like a bit of like Sandstorm or, you know, some sort of like low-key sort of house techno or something. But there, they seem to have like folk Croatian songs playing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When there was a goal.
Sorry?
When the goal was scored.
At halftime and
okay.
After the game, even before extra time. So it almost seemed like they didn't think that they were really up for a battle or they were gonna win.
Yeah.
It was very kind of like cutesy sort of me. And you're like, all right, like there's nothing amping up this game at all anywhere.
Well, perhaps they were trying to make Tottenham fall asleep.
It could have, there yeah. you go. It could have been tactical.
Mm. Yeah.
It could have been tactical. But like, we don't want to pump up the players. Let's just play some like, you know, 70s Croatian music.
Yeah.
This'll work.
Because I reckon if you're playing Chelsea Dagger by the Fratellis after every goal, you're going to get Spurs going as well. If you've ever been to a Perth Glory game, it gets you going.
Yeah, that is a great element of the Perth Glory Association. Football Club Association Conglomerate.
Conglomerate. Yeah. Out of all those, I think conglomerate seems to make the most sense.
Yeah, good. Do you, after this game, I started scrolling social media because I wanted the club statement to say Jose Mourinho had been fired because I was so mad. And I have really tried to give him time because when he came in, I was excited because how it was sold was like, this team has a whole bunch of really good players. We just need that final bit, that winning mentality, which he, if that's something he could instill, he hasn't done it because it's still the same. There's still the same problems. How did you feel? Where are you? Jose in, Jose out?
I'd say I hate to be this person right now, but I'm probably Jose Fence.
Jose Fence?
Yeah, because I did the same thing. After I saw the game, I went on and had a look on Twitter, as you do.
Yep.
Which I often find is a bit of a mistake because you just, like, everyone's emotions are very raw, which is great they're putting it out there, but I think it gets very polarized. Like, the amount of comments, like, after the game saying, J- Jose out. Enic has ruined this club. Blah, blah, blah. Enic has taken this club through 20 years of this. Enic sucks. Enic, we haven't done a rebuild. We haven't done this. We haven't done that. Everything else. And I'm kind of like, I kind of get that these are the overall feelings that a lot of people have. But at the same time, like, I just want to process this result as it is. Like, I don't want us to lose a game and suddenly it's like, well, the whole project's the problem and all that. I'm like, can we just, like, you know, we need to, like, wallow in this. And, like, we need to feel out this result, what happened in this particular game, because Enic didn't lose this game. And so if you're going like, oh, Enic, they didn't invest. They didn't invest for a year and a half and blah, 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 and that we didn't have the squad players and then we didn't lose. No, I don't buy that.
Yeah.
I'm like, in this actual game, the players didn't perform.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that even with Mourinho, whatever he's sort of setting up to do, and I know often the managers, they take the fall. I still think that it's not like we had players there who were like, you know, busting their guts and it was just all over the place in terms of like, oh, it just, the tactics were wrong. The setup was wrong. You know, like when we played Chelsea recently and as Chelsea's completely, they got the game plan right. We got it wrong.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at those things, you're like, okay, if the game plan is wrong, definitely the manager's fault.
Yep.
In this, like, we're talking about a team that is in a much weaker European league.
Yep.
And the players, to me, it just didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
So to go back to your point about the, you know, how this works in on Twitter is, I just find it's like, I don't know. I think that, you know, at some stage we're going to have to actually hold players accountable for certain things that are happening in all this as well, and not just always go the easy answer of like, well, it's because we didn't buy players 18 months ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I am with you there. I just wanted an immediate someone to be punished. I'm so with you. I think ultimately, you know, you can sort of, you can look at the players didn't show up. I agree with you. But then it's also like, well, it's a manager's job to motivate the players so that they show up. And that didn't happen. Why didn't that happen? It could be that the players are very difficult to motivate. It could be that Jose can no longer motivate players to play the way that he wants to play. It doesn't work. But I saw a post, I think The Athletic posted it and said that players within the club are unhappy with Jose's training methods. They don't feel that they are. They feel they're too opposition focused and not focused on their game plan. And I was like, this is very similar to just before Pochettino got sacked.
Mm.
And it was like, the players are sick of training Pochettino's system. They don't want to do double sessions anymore. And I was like, this is the same group of players that are now fed up with two different managers' approaches that are very different approaches. And I guess what I'm trying to get to here as my thesis statement is that I think you're right. There needs to be some accountability. Like, can Jose now coming in, because now we've just got the League Cup final and the Premier League and we're going to be playing, you know, once a week, can he just chuck all the duds and just go, that's it, train with the under-23s, like Pochettino did when he came in initially and he just sort of like cut a huge section of the squad? Can Jose do that?
But I think that's maybe where you could also argue about the point about people say that maybe the investment isn't there and you don't have the right players. You hear a lot about former players talking about, you know, whether you win something or you don't. Each season, bringing in new players freshens up things. So players can maybe get frustrated with the manager's style or whatnot, but when you bring new heads in and heads that are there for that specific manager, it can really change the atmosphere of the group.
Mm.
And maybe that's something that Tottenham have needed more of over the years, because you've had a lot of the same players. And the players who have the loudest voices are the ones that have been there the longest. And
yeah.
And maybe that's something that they need to look at as well. And obviously you want players to do what the manager wants and you want them to all work and get along. But I think you also need to freshen things up. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that. And I think if the squad is mostly made up of players that a manager didn't sign, it can make things a little bit more muddied in that. It does seem, though, like there have been quite a lot of claims of from, I think, previous managers as well, also saying that when they were at Spurs, that they didn't get the players that they wanted, and the players that were bought were players that Levy bought.
Yeah.
And there have been a number of quotes, I think, from like Pochettino's made reference to things like that before. Villas-Boas made references to that. Juan de Ramos, Martin Jol. I think pretty much all of them have made some sort of reference to that. So from that angle, maybe there is this big cultural issue there of how we do go about transfers and what sort of players we try and bring in. And, you know, do we try and focus on younger players that have a higher resale value? Even though Bale, obviously an older player, there's a big commercial interest there in bringing back Bale.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because you think if we had a full, if there was no COVID and stadiums were open, you think that would be full every week. People would want to be going there to see Bale. I'm sure they've sold a lot of Bale shirts as well. So you could put that down as well. Like Bale is, you know, an international superstar and recognized figure. So that could be down to, you know, the a sort of big commercial move too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's, there are probably a lot of deep issues that run there. But I just see, like, how is that going to change? Like how, like any, unless they sell, which it seems like every now and then we hear a rumor like, oh, they're going to sell to such and such. Oh, there's a party from wherever who are interested. But I don't think anything's really materialized. It wouldn't surprise me though, given now that we've got the stadium, new stadium, relatively new training ground. Like I know it's about 8 years old or so, but it's still quite new and, is really great. Amazon Doco, NFL, all that sort of stuff. Like this does really feel like building up the club to sell at some stage. I just wonder when that is going to be and then what the result of that is going to be. Is are we going to get someone else who's in and, you know, quite conservative with how they're going to spend things, or are we going to get sort of another Chelsea Man City situation where we're going to get an owner who actually just wants to pump a huge amount of funds into the squad?
I feel like at the same time though, you're not like that red lot up the road who are happy to be down in 10th. You know, I think with your current owner, you do want to be in top four and you do want to be pushing for hopefully eventually probably the title. And I think, yeah, there's obviously some, they aren't investing maybe when they can or should, and there's maybe some other issues, but you are still doing things and I think you have a far greater ambition than that other lot.
I love this, that even like Chelsea Spurs fan, like we can agree on one thing that we both hate
Arsenal. Well, Tim, I mean, the amount of times that I hear Tim say, I just hate him. I just hate him so much. Like you really, really, really dislike Arsenal.
They and probably United are the two teams that I just hate. Because, you know, like I was born in the 90s, so Chelsea, I suppose, came, you know, got really good in the early 2000s when Roman took over, and they had just won, I think, their last title, and they haven't won one since. But it was mainly between us and United and Arsenal, and those were always big games to me, and they were the teams that, in my mind, we were playing off against for the trophies. So I can't stand them, and I think their fans are just, they're wild. They're a different bunch. And they lose their minds. They feel like they seem like they have, or they think they have a divine right to be on the top, when no one does, you know. And that just really gets me going.
it's interesting for me, and obviously us being good mates, is that in the, like, I hate Chelsea so much, in the last few years, especially under Pochettino, we really saw this slide, Arsenal going, you know, they were sort of becoming more and more irrelevant. And the rivalry for me kind of lost its juice. But at the same time, the games we would have against you guys were like the Battle of the Bridge or even that, you know, like I think it was the sort of big first Pochettino win when we beat you guys when you had Jose in charge. Those games, and we hadn't beat you at the Bridge in so long, so those games felt like there was so much more build up to them. And then after the Battle of the Bridge, where you guys ruined any chance of us winning the title, it made me so angry. So for me, the Chelsea rivalry is really hot. Like,
Well, I think as well with that, the like I don't know when Arsenal won their last title, but I'm pretty sure that was before Chelsea won Champions League.
Yep.
In about 2011?
I think they haven't won a title since we started winning them. And okay. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Because I think that to me, the big sort of turning point, like obviously when Chelsea got investment and, you know, the Abramovich era and all that sort of stuff started, then there's a lot of hatred that goes towards Chelsea there.
Mm.
But then what really sort of, it almost felt like, oh, this is unfair. They're just buying all like the greatest players, like, you know, that they can afford. It was heartbreaking for me that my favorite player of all time, Hernan Crespo, went to Chelsea.
Mm.
That was, I don't know, he didn't really take off there. But he scored some very nice goals there. But I was so conflicted when that happened. Like it was heartbreaking. I digress. that Champions League game when Chelsea won, and everyone thought, oh, Bayern's gonna win, but like it's easy. It's like Chelsea have no chance here. Chelsea win and then knock us out of Champions League
claim
that spot. And then after that happens, UEFA go, you know what? This rule's a bit stuffed. We'll change it in the future.
Yeah, we'll change it next time.
So now Spurs are the only team in history that rule ever applied to, and it was at the hands of Chelsea winning when we finished fourth. Yep. So I think that, to me, also really sort of like that got the fire going for Chelsea Spurs. Obviously just the local rivalry anyway, but that felt it's like, oh, they've taken something from us now. And now it's being like rubbed in our faces. This is starting to heat up. Yeah. And then I think from that point onwards, like the games you're talking about, Barney, it's like there's really been something there. Like you feel a lot more tension when you're playing Chelsea than when you do Arsenal.
Yeah.
I think, and you know, last time I was at Stamford Bridge and they, before the game, all the Chelsea fans sing the Chelsea song and one of the lines is "We hate Tottenham." And that didn't used to be in there, I think, 5 or 10 years ago. That's a recent thing. And they sing that before every game. So it shows you that is a massive rivalry now between both fans. And there's this sentiment within the Chelsea fans that if there's one thing you have to do, it's you have to beat Tottenham or at least you can't lose.
Yeah.
And that never used to be there, right? So, yeah, it's a big game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of... I just would like to get one over, just one over Chelsea. That'd be nice.
Yeah,
I put a poll up on our Twitter.
Yeah.
A few days ago, which said, you know, would you rather us win the league and Champions League next season, and then Arsenal win the league 5 years in a row after that?
Oh.
And I think it's like that to me. What that represents is like it's greater thing of like, you know. Are we happy to just get a result in something, even if it still means that other teams around us maintain more dominance? Or are we sort of more focused on stopping these other teams being more dominant and it doesn't matter as much if we win or not?
Mm. Yeah. I choose to win the trophies. I choose to win the trophies.
And then build a cave and hide away from
them. Yeah, and then have the curse for 5 years. Ah, that's all right.
Yeah. I think at this stage now, not winning things, like, I want to know what it feels like to watch Spurs win something that is not, you know, the League Cup in 2009.
Yeah.
So even though our only chance this season now is the League Cup.
Yeah.
Which is a very tough game.
Yeah.
To play against, but I would love us to win something. And then I personally don't really care if that means that, you know, Chelsea, Arsenal, whoever... you know, once like it's just at that stage now where it's like I don't think you want to go through your whole life and not see some sort of victory.
Yeah.
Did you think, honestly, we're going into this like the Europa League campaign? Did you believe that you could win it? Because I genuinely thought that you would at least get to the final with Jose. I was like, regardless of what's happening in this season, he'll find a way. He'll do the same old Jose thing and he'll get there. Did you believe that you could win it?
I thought winning was a big shout.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely thought though we should get semifinals.
Yeah.
Yep. 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 I thought we would at least get close.
Yeah.
And then we might run into an actually good team and then get kicked out. But yeah, not what's happened. Mm. We would get knocked out by a team that is, you know, a good, you know, in one of the top leagues.
Yeah.
And it was they won fair and square or you know whatever, like, yeah, not this.
Especially, I think with Europa, how the Champions League teams drop down.
Mm.
It's because you never know who's going to slip up. Have been in Champions League, end up in Europa, and then it's like, you know, suddenly they're dropping down and they've got, you know, a few games to put together and can sort of, you know, knock you out. So I think that's what for me was like. I don't think we're nailed on.
Mm.
Like, winners, where there were a lot of like Spurs fans who almost seemed to be talking about it like this was a shoe-in to win this league, win this cup.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you had to be hopeful.
Yeah.
Of it.
Yep. Yep, definitely. So next Spurs game is Villa, Monday morning, I think, Melbourne time. How do you think it's going to go? What's going to happen? How are we going to respond? Is there going to be a response?
Buddy, I'm going to keep my mouth so shut.
Yeah.
From this point onwards.
Yeah.
Because it's like, or I'll give my opinion, but then I need to give the opposite opinion because I honestly have no idea now.
Yeah.
Like we had that little run going together and it was like, okay, we've steadied the ship. Maybe that little slip up that we had for 4 or 5 games.
Yep.
Maybe we're past that. Mm-hmm. Right? Maybe the team's come back together. We're looking all right. And then we go and we lose to Arsenal in a horrible display. We lose to Dinamo in a horrible display. So now I'm just thinking like, you know, if you're these players and as Hugo's pointed out, a very fractured squad it seems.
Yeah.
How do you pull yourself together now to go, okay, now we really need to fight tooth and nail to try and finish fourth when obviously the desire wasn't there to get past Dinamo.
Mm.
And again, no disrespect to Dinamo, but if they were in the Premier League, like they're barely a mid-table team.
Yeah.
So if the desire is not, we can't get past them, I don't know how we're going to go against a team like Villa.
Yeah.
And Villa go into this knowing that Spurs are wounded.
Mm.
And then it's easy for them, excuse me, it's easy for them to just play the underdog card as well and be like, well, you know, Spurs could bounce back. They're a very good team. They're a very good team, which I think they've already started doing, like in their press conferences.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we've got to be so wary of them because they're a great team and they've had some bad. So it's already, like we should still be favourites for this game, but I don't think we're going to win.
I think a lot depends on if Jack Grealish plays, because, you know, since he's been out, they haven't scored many goals and even their defensive record hasn't been amazing either. So, you know, and Ollie Watkins hasn't scored a lot in the last few weeks. So if Jack comes back in, then they're in for a shot, I think. But if he doesn't play, personally, I think you win. I think Harry Kane, you know, if there's one thing that everyone knows about him is that he's obsessed with winning and scoring. And I just feel like he takes those, like he would have taken that loss personally, like that they were trying to just purely hurt Harry Kane only. And he's like, you know, he just will have to win this next game. I see you winning it.
I guess my only fear with Kane is he's played Dinamo first game, Arsenal, Dinamo again.
Extra time.
Extra time. True. And then Villa. So, and he already looks tired, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
I do agree though, if something's going to happen, it does feel like Kane's going to have to step up. Not to step up that he hasn't been stepping up, but it's almost like it's back to falling on his shoulders a little bit to dig us out.
Mm-hmm.
What's yours, Barney?
Well, I mean, from Jose's history with Chelsea, I think this might have been the second time around he and his other jobs. I think when things don't go well, he's not an arm around the shoulder manager, they continue to tank. Like, yeah. He's not very good at fixing situations so that then the whole thing swings around and it's all good. So every week that Pochettino, like when we weren't performing under him, every week I had the hope that this was the week we were going to get a reaction and things were going to turn around, and we didn't. And each game was sort of depressing and felt like all the players were running through honey, you know, like it was gross. So I think that we will lose.
Yeah, I think actually when I think back to that second, the second kind of coming of Jose at Chelsea and his last season, It was very much that. And his post-game comments the other night about the fact that they, you know, there was no effort there and all those kind of things. That's exactly what he was saying at Chelsea, you know, hanging the players out, saying they weren't working hard enough, they weren't doing what he told. And, yeah, there's probably a lot in that, and it's probably is whether or not he can get certain individuals on side and get them to play, because to try and rely on someone to do it themselves isn't really going to get you very far.
Well, it happened at Man U as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I think he's clever in the sense that, and it's more important when the fans are there, is if he sells the players out and says the players aren't trying very hard, that makes the fans angry at the players and not angry at him. And so he kind of divides the blame and then also divides the fan base in a way that he's able to, I guess, escape the full brunt of the situation, even if it is his fault. And we've talked today about how you can't put the blame solely on him. You know, there's so many other factors at play and factors that we are not aware of what is actually happening. But I don't think that, I mean, I hope beyond all hope that we play brilliantly against Villa. but I don't see it happening.
I think it can only last so long though as well, that the putting the blame on the players and kind of that idea of getting the fans on side, because, you know, coming back to my experience again of having him as our manager, it's probably something we can relate on, is that I love Jose. You know, he did so many amazing things at Chelsea, but in those last few months, was such a combustible character, and it was hard when your team is playing poorly and they look like they don't know what they're doing and they are playing football that, I'm not someone that has to have a team that plays incredible passing fast football, but they were playing just some awful stuff. It's really hard for them when he walks into a press conference and just he's, you know, he's not a happy guy and he starts blaming people, and it's hard to cop that on the chin as a fan. And you're not going to be, or at least I wasn't on his side in that moment. I was on the player's side. It felt like, you know, it felt like he didn't know what he was doing anymore. And I think that's where it gets really tough.
Well, I think even Glenn Hoddle, there's a quote that resurfaced recently that he made when Jose got sacked at Man U. And it was just basically about, though, you know, even though this is the most decorated manager in history and all that sort of stuff, there is a point where for certain managers, the game sort of moves on a bit from where they were. And Hoddle predicted that, you know, at the next club, he's like, I fear for the next club that Jose goes to, because I can't see it going well, because it seems like this is someone who's like not moving with the times as much. And you know, he's just not maybe as adaptable as he might've been previously. I'm probably not doing the full quote justice there, but
yeah, I've read it though. That is along
those sort of lines.
Yeah.
And interesting that it was Hoddle saying that, and then Jose ends up at Spurs.
Yeah. The curse. The curse.
He summoned Jose to teach us something here. Yeah,
look, some real monkey paw.
It really is.
Yeah.
There was a game I wanted to discuss.
Yeah.
While we've got Tim here.
Yeah.
So if we cast our minds back to 2015.
I'm there. Yep.
You're there?
Yep.
You're there?
Yep. Yep.
You're there? We're at Stamford Bridge.
Yep.
Yep. 5-3. Do we remember the 5-3?
Was that was at White Hart Lane, wasn't it? Is that the one that we won?
You're right. It's a White Hart Lane.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't remember that game at all, to be honest.
Wait, I'm lost now. You need to go back.
Is it White Hart Lane?
That we won the 5-3.
I thought we beat them at the... maybe it was 5-3. When was the first win at the Bridge?
Well, was that 16-17? And Dele scored two?
Dele Alli, he always... When he plays well, he always gets us.
Okay, then maybe that was the one that we first won there. Maybe the 5-3 was at the Lane.
That was, yeah. That was the Lane, yeah.
I like it. The notes I have in front of me, it just says everything but the venue. I've got every other stat from the game apart from where it was played.
From that 5-3?
Yeah, let's take your mind back to 2015.
Yeah.
White Hart Lane.
Okay, now I can see it.
Yeah, now you can see it. Now I'm painting the vivid picture. Yeah. 5-3.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, do you remember that game?
Look, if I'm honest, I have completely erased that from my brain.
Okay, I'm just trying to. I know I'm clutching at straws here, but I'm trying to get something positive from a Spurs point of view.
Yep.
In this podcast, it was Kane. Kane scored a couple. Rose, Townsend.
Andros Townsend
scored.
Wow.
And then His Holiness NASA Chadley.
Wow-y. Yep.
And then Diego Costa, Hazard, and Terry.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the other end of that.
Did you still have Adebayor, or was that the Soldado days, or was that way past that?
That was Soldado days.
Okay.
That was Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Territory, because Chadley was in as one of the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. Yep. We still had Adebayor, I'm pretty sure.
The bail money.
Oh, we might have still had him.
Yeah, but he wasn't getting games.
Well, I think at that stage, Kane had definitely taken over.
Yes, yeah.
I'm actually surprised that Adebayor never ended up at Chelsea.
He did pretty much every other club, didn't he?
He was pretty much everywhere else, but I'm just trying to think back. In terms of transfers, it feels like, have we ever nabbed a player that Chelsea have gone for?
Well, they remember the Willian debacle where he was getting a medical at Spurs and he's
at the training ground.
Yeah.
And then gets the call.
Come on over.
Yeah.
How good.
I know Chelsea were in for Danny Rose when he was playing really well. There was apparently a £50 million offer there.
Yeah.
They were also in for Eric Dier along with Man United.
Yeah, when was that? Was that when we had Jose the second time?
Oh, I'm not sure, actually.
Could have been. I know Jose was definitely interested in Dier when he was at Man U.
Yeah, that's what I want to think about.
It could have been at Chelsea as well.
Mm. Mm.
I know we refused to sell Modric.
Yeah.
To you.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think, it feels like we've never really got one over Chelsea in terms of signing a player.
I can't think of one.
Were you guys in for Ndombele, maybe?
Yeah, were you in for Serge Aurier?
Yeah, surely you guys would have been interested in Serge.
Lamella?
Yeah. Joe Hart. I think Joe Hart.
Yeah, Joe Hart. Yeah,
I think would have been in for Joey.
Yeah, that would have been it. Yeah, that's for sure.
I guess what I'm searching for here, Tim, is that as a Chelsea fan, have there been any Spurs moments that have really scarred you or left a mark at all?
I think it was that game you just brought up. I'm pretty sure we watched it together, Barn.
The 5-3? No, because I was we were watching it via the internet together, but we weren't together.
We've definitely watched a couple of games though where, like I said, oh mate, Dele Alli has scored and beaten us. I can't think of the specific games, but this man over here, Barney Pollock, when Tottenham Hotspur beat Chelsea, he doesn't let you forget.
Okay.
He jumps up and down in the room. He's screaming.
Yeah.
He slaps you.
Yeah. Okay.
He's quite aggressive and violent. But I think you beat us in, I think it was maybe last season, you beat us in a cup competition. I'm pretty sure Jose knocked out Lampard because I remember the next day I didn't watch it till the afternoon. I watched it on delay and again, Barney went on a rampage, but this time over social media. So there are a couple, yes. Mm. And you can thank Barney over here, the Tottenham Hotspur missionary, which I like to call him. He has, I don't know if you know about this, but he has, he's like, you know, those priests and old times that would go out and would try and convert people to their religion. Barney does that, but with Tottenham Hotspur. We have two friends and Jackson and Connor, and he's converted both of them to
they're
the Hotspur
my acolytes.
Way.
Yeah.
Yep. What's interesting though is that he seems to choose people who are already, they're not football fans to start with, they have other sports, but I would say they're probably a bit vulnerable because the teams they support aren't doing amazingly well. And they seem to be the ones that Barney goes for. And he gets them in and I think he tells them that, you know, it's going to be a wild ride. They're jump in now. It's like, it's a bit like Bitcoin. You know what I mean? He's selling you something. And so I wonder if this podcast is, you know, partly a new way of of finding some new Tottenham Hotspur fans and getting them in. But the Tottenham Hotspur missionary over here.
Well, as you were saying that, I was thinking, like, what is he selling them to? Like, where's the, you know, like, if, like, okay, put it like this, Barney. I'm a new fan.
Yeah.
Right? I'm a new fan and, hey, mate, I'm thinking of going for a team. Oh. Who should I support?
Oh.
I was thinking Man U.
Maybe. Oh, no, you don't want to go for Man U.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, you can if you want, but, like, I don't know. You don't really want to be, like, a glory hunter or anything, do you?
No, that's true. No, I don't like that.
They're, like, the biggest team, you know, in English history for winning trophies. They're a bit like Collingwood here. Like, everyone kind of hates them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, I don't want to go for them.
Yeah.
I'll go for Arsenal then. Thierry Henry, legend. I remember at school, everyone talked about him. I'll go for Arsenal.
Yeah. Here's a clip from Arsenal Fan TV.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I don't want to buy into that.
Yeah, yeah, but you're kind of on the right track. So, like, Tottenham are probably a good team to go for because they are an exciting team. They have sort of been moving their way up the English league for a number of years.
Oh, brand I new like progress.
Yeah, yeah, brand new stadium. And if you say that you support them, people won't think of you as a glory hunter.
Oh, okay, that's good. Because I don't want people to think that, you know, I'm just like, you know,
jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah, I'm not like Harry Fairweather over here.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't be saying those things to me.
Who is this Harry Fairweather?
Yeah. You can't say those things to me.
Shut up, Harry.
Oh, dear.
I'm sorry, Harry. I'm just trying to find a team, all right?
Understand.
I'm sorry, you had to take the fall then.
Hmm.
Oh. Yeah, so are you on board?
Yeah, I guess I'll go first.
And that's how it works. Yeah.
That's all right. So
Harry Fairweather is with me, thank you. Yeah, okay. He's with me.
So you plant someone nearby.
Yeah, yeah.
Presumably in a Liverpool, a Man U, Arsenal top.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can, like, I'm just so impressed because I've never been able to convince anyone to even remotely think about going for Spurs.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, well, I mean, I've got a few people.
Yeah. I'm like I'm so happy about it. Like it's literally my dad and myself. That's the only Spurs fans really that I've ever met, because without winning things, it's hard to convince people.
That is true.
That's funny, because I find you know, a lot of people, you hear a lot of people say they know a lot of Chelsea fans. I have a similar experience, just like me. And my dad, like, my dad's from England. He's a Chelsea fan. This is his jersey. I was just given it as a kid. That's how it went.
Is that a jersey?
Oh, yes. It's a jersey.
Oh, I thought you just covered yourself in shit.
Oh, a couple of jokes over here.
Anyway, sorry, go on. You were telling a good story.
This is the point on the podcast where we turn and we just get nasty.
Yeah. The booby traps come in.
Because we're so deflated at this stage.
I always think, you know, there'll be heaps of Chelsea fans in Australia, but there's just, everyone seems to be, I don't know if this is your experience, everyone seems to be a Liverpool fan, or maybe it's particularly in Melbourne, or I just always seem to run into Melbourne fans, and I'm searching for my pals, you know, I'm searching for my people and I just can't find them.
Yeah, I think Liverpool has definitely had a pretty big Australian connection, because I think there was Craig Johnson.
Yes, yes.
In the 80s. And then obviously with Kuehl.
Mm-hmm.
And Liverpool also winning a few things,
yeah,
being sort of relatively, like, it seems like there has been that connection,
yeah,
there. I would agree on that. Like, most people know Liverpool or Man U,
mm,
and Man U purely just due to like the success, of the Ferguson era.
Yeah. 100%.
And when you're at school and you're a kid and you're like, all right, I'm going to have Man U. They win. That's it.
Yeah.
I don't have to do anything else. Great.
Mm.
I wanted to, the first time, this is a hark back to when we were talking about the first time that Spurs beat Chelsea at the Bridge. The first time that it happened, I was at Tim's house. We were going to watch the game together and I was so excited. And the first goal went in, and I remember Tim, we were meant to be watching it together, but for some reason there ended up being a bunch of other people there that were sitting outside that didn't care about the football.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim was being a host and he came in and saw that they were losing. And I was like, we got a goal, we're winning. And Tim was like, oh, yeah. Why are you being so antisocial, though? And went back outside. And so I didn't even get the joy victory.
Yeah. I took that away.
Yeah, you took that away. which I think explains why every time we do beat you now, I have to make up for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like you must really miss, well, we used to watch all the games a lot of the time at my house.
Yeah.
And my mum would be there and she would just always be like, how's Tottenham going, Barney?
Yeah.
And always just try and like stick it in.
Oh.
And every time that Tottenham would win a game against us, he would just love it. You'd always bring it up to my mum and she was not impressed.
So your mum was not just doing this as just like a little like...
Oh, no.
Naively, because she doesn't... She knew.
She knows.
She knew that... So is she Chelsea as well?
Yeah.
So there's a whole family Chelsea.
Whole family Chelsea.
Yep.
It's one of those things I think that, you know, mums sometimes try to like really get involved with what their children are into.
Yeah.
Like I think it was definitely, my dad grew up as a Chelsea fan and whatnot. And once I became really invested, then my mum was too. And then she just enjoys sticking it to Barney.
She's good at it though. That's the scary thing. She's really good. Like you'd rock up and she'd be like, that Tottenham not looking too good. Like, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, thanks, Chris. No problems. And then like 5 minutes later, she'd be like, Harry Kane, do you think he's any good? And you'd be like, oh, you know what you're doing.
You just get a little barbed question there going through.
Yeah.
No, I do like that. It is nice when you have that. Like my wife, she at one stage was trying to get into Spurs a little bit when I was watching a game. And then what she had done is she looked up on her phone and she looked up Spurs because this was mid-game.
Yep.
So we're watching the game and then I was like, oh, who do you think is sort of playing well? And she pauses. She looks up on her phone. She types in Spurs. She's like, oh, I think Tim Duncan's having a good one. And I was like, all right, here we go. We'll play this. I was like, oh, yeah? Yeah, who else? And she's like, oh, Tony Parker doing really great stuff. Obviously looked up San Antonio Spurs accidentally and got that. But I appreciated that effort because I guess like, you know, being, you know, quite into these sports and it takes up a lot of time. It also takes up time at interesting sort of hours.
Yeah.
Mm.
Actually, on the interesting hours, my girlfriend Maddie went and got a haircut yesterday and her hairdresser asked her where she lived and she said Collingwood on Peel Street next to where Laser Pig... Oh, I'm just going to skip away where I live. What am I doing?
Yeah, Barney, no government details.
Yeah, and my credit card. Anyway, so on Peel Street and the hairdresser was like, do you live with two guys? And Maddie was like, yeah, I do. And she was like, oh, I always call that house the football house because every time I walk past it like early hours to go to work, they've got the football on really loud and all the doors open.
No.
Yeah.
But hang on.
Yeah.
So you in your locale,
yeah,
which we don't need to go through the suburbs again.
Yeah. I won't say it again.
We don't need the GPS coordinates.
It's in Sydney.
Yeah.
Somewhere in Sydney.
Yeah.
So you were watching the games in the morning,
turn
up the volume real loud, open up the front door.
Yeah.
Why?
So I turn the volume up because I want to enjoy the game. And then I'm always like, let's get some air in here. And so then I open up the door as well.
Yeah.
And that's how it happens. To me, it's just a closed off ecosystem. Like it's just happening. But apparently people are walking past and calling it the football house. So
yeah.
Does that fill you with pride?
No. No, it doesn't.
I guess also depending on when they're walking past, you're either going to be like, oh, the really happy football house or the completely abusive football house.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it was embarrassing. I feel embarrassed.
No, I like that. It's great. This is our first, you know, C grade celebrity.
Yeah,
on the pod.
Yep. Yeah, I'm either C grade.
You are now.
Yeah,
you're known locally.
Hell yeah, yeah. Locally, the football house.
The football house.
Yep. Yep.
So soon enough, that barber will be a Spurs fan.
Exactly.
If this is your tactic, then I love it.
Yeah, see? Oh, they mentioned... Oh, because Maddie will go back and say, oh, they actually brought it up on the football podcast that they do. And then the hairdresser will be like, oh, I should listen to that. And then listen to it and then use it to go to sleep like everyone does with this podcast.
Yeah.
That'll go into her dreams. And slowly but surely, she'll start noticing Tottenham Hotspur stuff everywhere. It'll become more prominent. And then she'll become a fan.
This is great. And then presumably she'll get other people to just walk by the house as well. She'll rope them into the system.
Yeah, exactly.
So even if we're playing badly, Barn, I think over the next few weeks,
yeah,
you just need to shout out positive things.
Yeah.
Like even if the game's gone really badly.
Sure. You can do that. Yeah.
We lost, but you know, we played with spirit and it's a really nice family club to be a part of.
The game is about glory. And if you don't get that, the echo of glory. Wow, I'm really hearing that echo. Yeah.
Have we convinced you, Tim?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Well, is that...
We tried. Yeah. Well, look, that was the main goal for this episode and we failed. So
yeah. That's...
I think we can wrap it up there. Thank you, Tim, for joining us.
Thanks so much for being on, Tim.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And we will be back soon.
Yeah. We'll be back after the Villa game, hopefully celebrating a win.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. And if we're not celebrating a win, we have a very special guest on.
Yeah, my dad will be there.
Yep.
Be there. We're talking some old Spurs. We'll be looking back. So if we've had a loss, we'll probably just Villa game will be done in a sentence.
Yep.
And then we'll just chat about Spurs, you know, winning things years ago. Yeah.
Klinsmann.
Yeah.
Hey Tim, are you free?
It's starting.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I've been Barney.
I've been Dan.
And I've been Tim.
Thank you very much for listening. And have a great day or night, morning or afternoon.
You've been listening to A Bit Spursy. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. Email us at hello@abitspursy.com and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms.